Given that there are some events in Waterloo inviting people who are Black or who identify as Black, it got me thinking, just what are the rules these days when it comes to people pretending to be something they're not? It's Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. I'm David Menzies, and this is the Ezra Levent Show.
Shame on you, you censorious thug.
In our mad, mad world, it's with increasing frequency that I come across a news tip from a whistleblower or even a press release. And after digesting the contents, I ask myself, there's no way this can be for real. I know for a fact that I'm not the only one questioning reality these days, pondering aloud whether I'm residing on planet Earth or that maybe I'm trapped in the Twilight Zone. Indeed, some stories these days, the only thing missing is Rod Serling in the corner smoking a cigarette and providing narration. I say I'm not the only one having difficulty determining if it's real or if it's Memorex, so to speak, because I'd wager that many of you are aware of the Babylon Bee, a cheeky and often hilarious satirical website. The Babylon Bee slogan is, "Fake news you can trust." Brilliant. But you know, a few years ago, the creators of the Babylon Bee felt compelled to launch an additional website called Not the Bee. Like the Babylon Bee, Not the Bee is a humor-based news, opinion, and entertainment website, but with one huge difference. As the name suggests, the absurd content is not satire, but rather real bona fide news. For example, here's a story I plucked from yesterday's edition. Quote, "Minneapolis is paying a witness of George Floyd's death $150,000 for emotional damages, seriously," end quote. What is more batshite crazy here, folks, that the emotionally scarred eyewitness, Donald Williams, is getting a six-figure payout, or that Mr. Williams happens to be a mixed martial arts fighter? Now, I might be wrong, but I would reckon that someone involved in the kick-ass MMA business is made of pretty stern stuff. And I'm pretty sure that in the squared circle, Donald Williams has seen his fair share of carnage. But apparently not. Just for stating that his sensibilities were affected by an ugly incident, well, the city of Minneapolis gets out its checkbook and compensates this eyewitness to the tune of $150,000 U.S. And a story like that justifies the necessity for Not to Be. The point is that real news has caught up to and even overtaken satire and parody. This is the reason why I think Mad Magazine, which used to be a money spinner, went out of business some 5 years ago. Just look at the madness that has made the headlines. For instance, can anyone actually still believe that former Oakville shop teacher Carrie Lemieux regularly showed up in class sporting enormous Z-cup breasts, which he actually said were real boobs and not prosthetics? Yeah, Kayla was suffering from a very rare medical condition, you see, until he wasn't suffering from that very rare medical condition. Remember our encounter with him at a Burlington shopping mall last April?
Where are your breasts? Why are you dressing inappropriately in front of children?
You know, folks, I've been practicing journalism for almost 40 years now, and never did I ever imagine that I would utter the query, "Where are your breasts?" Anyway, the Z Cups were AWOL that day, only to return again on another day, and then it was really thanks for the memories as Lemieux's ginormous breasts disappeared apparently once and for all. Currently, Busty Lemieux has transitioned into Bearded Lemieux, and he now still teaches at a school in Hamilton. But the question arises, why has this fraudster not been fired with cause? I mean, he lied about having a disability, a medical condition that clearly never existed. In any event, if I didn't have to be here at Rebel News World Headquarters in order to guest host for the Big Boss Man this evening, my original plan was to go down to Cambridge, Ontario. That's because I received a tip that a Cambridge school is hosting a parent-teacher night. Nothing new or exciting about that, really, except that this meet-and-greet session is exclusively for the, quote, families and caregivers of African and Caribbean and Black-identifying ACB students, end quote. It's billed as Black Parent Information Night Cambridge, and it's taking place at the Galt Collegiate Institute and Vocational School. It is being staged by the Waterloo Region District School Board and something called Blues Cambridge. I don't know about you, but I thought racial segregation was an ugly thing of the past. Apparently not. And by the way, why did the loony left become so downright insane? Decades ago, the left, when it was dominated by classical liberals as opposed to Marxists, was all about stamping out racism, such as organizing a boycott, divestment, sanction campaign, successfully, against South Africa when that nation operated under the odious political system of apartheid. But now the left is all about new apartheid, segregating people into various silos based along racial lines and gender lines. Unbelievable. Anyway, yesterday I reached out to the school board's media relations team with the following six questions. One, what is the ostensible policy reason for having a racially segregated parent information night? Two, given that this event is indeed segregated by race, is this not a form of racism, given that others are excluded? Three, are there going to be other parent information nights based on race, i.e. Asian, Caucasian, etc.? Four, will there be other parent information nights based on religion and sexual orientation identification? Five, I am curious what Black identifying means. Does this mean that someone who is not Black but identifies as Black would be allowed to attend? And six, I notice one of the topics up for discussion is progressive discipline. Can you inform me what this means? Alas, folks, it's radio silence, even though you would think that a publicly funded school board would be accountable to parents, taxpayers, and the press, but no. And while it is bad enough that the board is channeling a form of apartheid light here, I'm really, really curious about that bit regarding someone who is not Black but identifies as Black. What does that mean exactly? I mean, I thought race was that line in the sand when it comes to the wackadoodle progressives and their obsession with identifying as fill in the blank. Exhibit A, that early victim of cancel culture known as Rachel Dolezal. Remember her? Well, more on Rachel in just a moment. But when it comes to this identification business, I must ask aloud, what are the rules in 2024 when it comes to pretending to be someone or something that you are not? Sadly, it's barely newsworthy anymore when a biological man identifies as a woman to get on a sports team. And yeah, I'm looking at you, Tommy Ash Davis. He's that gender-bending grifter who plays for the Fergus Highlanders female rugby team and injuring real female opponents with vicious tackles in the process. And yeah, I'm also looking at you, those three dudes who play for the Seneca Sting female volleyball team. They are also injuring real female opponents thanks to spiking the ball off their heads. Oh, diversity. Now, not to go off on a tangerine here, but isn't it a wee bit odd that when it comes to transgenderism in sports, that it is always, always, always a one-way street? which is to say you don't see so-called trans men, that would be females pretending to be men, joining a male sports league and dominating, do you? What am I saying, dominating? Trans men can't even make the taxi squad of a man's team. So maybe, just maybe, there is a good biological reason to separate male and female athletes with the exceptions of equestrian and auto racing? Or am I being shockers transphobic here? But like I said, from rugby and volleyball to powerlifting, accepting gender benders is a de rigueur thing these days. Why? Well, according to the defenders of this war on women, it's all about accepting the dogma of human rights commissions and tribunals that dictate if 350-pound bearded Bubba identifies as Stinkerbell, well, we must accept that. And yet, what if Bubba is not a genuine trans person, but is rather just a garden variety loser who can't crack the men's team, but wants to set records on the female side? And what if Bubba is only a pervert who really just wants to leer at women in a state of undress in the locker room and doesn't even care about sports at all? How do we know for sure what's going on in Bubba's head? Well, unless there is a Vulcan available to do a mind meld, we don't know.
Fascinating.
I have asked these questions to the woke powers that be several times, and these queries always, always go unanswered. In fact, I get the gist that even asking such a query is offensive to them. Poor babies. It's as if the human rights racketeers abide by the rules of Major League Baseball. You know, a tie goes to the runner. Thus, we must always accept the word of transgenders that they are genuine, because to even question the motives of people who might be mentally ill, well, that's a wee bit offensive, isn't it? But not only can one switch genders these days with affirmation and applause coming from the usual woke suspects, one can also identify as being of a different age. And again, who are we to say that this is wrong? Case in point, Paul Walshett of Toronto was featured a while back in the UK's Daily Mail and other media outlets around the world for all the wrong reasons. You see, when Paul was 46, he decided to leave his wife and seven kids. Oh no, it wasn't about Paul shacking up with another woman, but rather he wanted to live life as a transgendered six-year-old girl. Paul now goes by the name Stephanie. Naturally, even the name is spelt oddly, S-T-E-F-O-N-K-N-E-E.
What a weirdo.
But even more incredibly, little Steph, who by the way stands 6'3" and is built like a linebacker, actually found an older couple in Toronto to adopt him, her, it. So it is that when Paul is at home, he loves to dress up as a little girl and he likes to play with dolls. He also plays with his adoptive parents' grandchildren. Say, where is the Children's Aid Society when you really need them, eh? By the way, just check out this photo of Paul slash Stephanie. Why is he sucking on a pacifier? I thought his alter ego is supposed to be a six-year-old girl, not a six-month-old toddler. By the way, whether he's 6 years or 6 months old, is the Ontario Ministry of Transportation aware of Stephanie? You see, when it is time for little Steph to earn some do-re-mi, he gets behind the wheel of a snowplow come wintertime. I thought you had to be at least 16 years old to drive a motorized vehicle. Oh, never mind. So we have gender, we have age. What else receives the seal of approval for transitioning? Well, we mustn't forget changing into a different life form. Consider the curious case of Cody Dentremont. Last year, Cody decided to reimagine himself as a woman. He even took on a new name, Desiree Anderson, which kind of sounds like a burlesque performer to me, but there was apparently a sinister reason for Cody transitioning into Desiree. It was all part of a ploy to gain admission to a Windsor women's shelter, and incredibly, the folks running the Welcome Center shelter for women and families thought it was perfectly acceptable to allow this biological male grifter to reside with biological women seeking a safe space, because trans women are real women, even after Cody was charged with the Windsor Police Service for sexual assault. But hey, doesn't matter. Check it out. Getting into a safe space with real biological women.
If it's a transgender woman, we support them with what they need.
We're going to have to call the police.
Okay, for standing on a sidewalk?
Don't film me. Thank you.
Okay, but you approached us. You interrupted us.
I'm approaching you because you're filming my clients and our property.
Well, no, we're not filming your clients. You're quite wrong about that. And what's your opinion of a biological man staying with biological
female? I'm just going to call the police.
Anyway, it's almost a moot point because Cody / Desiree now identifies as a different species.
And ma'am, we reached out to someone who's, knows about this shelter and has friends here. And she told us, and I'm not making this up, I wish I were, that right now this Cody Dentremont is identifying as a cat.
Yes, he is. Yes.
How does one identify as a cat? He dresses up as a cat?
Yeah, I believe he does. I've never seen him in dress up, but he does identify as a cat now. Man, woman, and cat.
I thought I saw a pussy cat.
By the way, we wonder why the Windsor trans cat matter is seemingly being hushed up. Neither the Windsor Police Service nor the courthouse in Windsor will tell us what the latest is in regard to Cody's sexual assault charges. They won't even say if he's had a trial yet. You'd think this would be public information. It usually is, but it looks like the authorities are going out of their way to protect this nut bar. Why? Well, stay tuned, folks. We have filed a Freedom of Information request. We're going to find out what the hell is going on with this cat one way or another. In any event, as I previously stated, I remain very, very confused regarding the rules of transitioning. Unless those rules have also transitioned recently. Because to recap, one can change gender, one can change age, one can even go from a member of Homo sapiens to a member of Felis silvestris catus, and it's a celebration of diversity, equity, and inclusion. But with the Waterloo Region District School Board inviting not just Black people, but people who identify as being Black to their event today, isn't that offside according to the woke joke progressives? And yes, I fall back to the surreal case of Rachel Dalzell. That is Exhibit A. Dalzell used to be gainfully employed as the NAACP director in Spokane, Washington. Dalzell is a white woman, but she has long self-identified as a Black person, even though her family made public statements that their daughter was born Caucasian. Dalzell, who seems to spend most of her free time in tanning salons, has long remained mute on discussions regarding her ethnicity. But when Dalzell was indeed outed as being white back in 2015, well, it was a good career while it lasted, I guess. Because poor Rachel was pilloried and even bullied in both social media and Media Classic for her false pronouncement that she was really a Black woman. She lost her job, she had to go on welfare, and at one point she was involved in doing porn to pay the bills. And yet, in light of all the various forms of transanity that have taken root this past decade, did Rachel Dalzell truly do anything wrong? Especially since I sincerely believe that she was and is a true admirer of Black culture, so much so that she desperately wanted to be Black herself. In that regard, I don't think her shtick had anything to do with mocking Black people. Oh no, mocking Black people, after all, that's the favorite pastime of a certain former part-time drama teacher, methinks, Well, you know what I think is perhaps even more offensive than Trudeau donning blackface makeup all over his body? It's that whenever he does so, the Prime Minister is always sticking his tongue out. Is that how Justin Trudeau perceives black people? That they're akin to, I don't know, panting dogs or something? What a sicko. You know what's perhaps even more sickening? It's that when the blackface scandal broke, the Canadian mainstream media became obsessed. Oh no, not with the number of times Justin has indulged in his little fetish, and even Trudeau himself says he's lost count, but rather they wanted to know what was the motivation regarding the whistleblower who originally leaked the blackface photos to Time magazine in the US. Unbelievable. And the double standard, it strikes yet again, doesn't it, folks? Had that been, say, Stephen Harper caught in a blackface moment, that scandal, I would say, would still be on the front page today. But back to Rachel Dalzell, can her crucifiers of 9 years ago now kindly cut her some slack? Because it appears as though identifying as a member of another race is suddenly perfectly fine. Oh, and by the way, it's not just the Waterloo Region District School Board with its segregated PTA meeting. Indeed, you may remember our video last month when camerawoman Avery Armstrong and I ventured out to the University of Waterloo. And gee, what is it about Waterloo? For it is at this higher place of learning that twice a week, the swimming pool is open to black folk only. And for what it's worth, the university spells folk as F-O-L-X. I guess it's true, spelling just doesn't count these days. So it is that I reached out to the University of Waterloo's Media Relations Department. My questions were as follows. Is this black people only swim real or a hoax? I asked this because the poster that was sent along to me below misspells folks as F-O-L-X. Assuming these sessions are being carried out, what is the reason for utilizing the pool for one race only? Is this not the very definition of racism, the fact that other races, Asians, white, Indigenous, etc., are being excluded from swimming strictly based on skin color? Many decades ago, activists justifiably organized a boycott, divest, sanction movement against South Africa for its racist apartheid system. How is your swim policy any different than a form of apartheid, i.e. race-based discrimination? If someone of another race identified as being black, would that person be allowed to swim? Well, folks, unlike the Waterloo Region District School Board, which has ignored my request for comment, I actually promptly received an answer from the U of W. Well, okay, it's not really a true answer. It's sort of a non-answer in that it does not address all the specific questions that I submitted. But here goes, quote, "The University of Waterloo is committed to ensuring that everyone in our community feels welcome in our recreational spaces, including the pool on campus, in addition to the 21 hours of open recreational swimming that is offered to all members of our community each week. The university has added recreational swimming options for family swims, 2S LGBTQIA plus swims, and women-only swims, and swims dedicated to welcoming black folk," end quote. Oh, fantastic. We thought the discrimination was merely confined to members of the black community and those identifying as being black. But no, naturally, members of the, say, Spirit Unicorn set get special treatment too. And by the way, how is the LGBTQ, et cetera, policy enforced? I mean, unless two dudes show up driving in a Mazda Miata, how do the gatekeepers at the University of Waterloo know that these guys are gay and therefore permitted to swim? Another query that went unanswered, what about special swim sessions for other identifiable groups on campus, such as Asians and the Indigenous? Don't other visible minorities count? And really, what the hell is the deal with spelling folk as F-O-L-X. Sorry, guys, I'm just obsessed with that. But seriously, it's all so very sad, isn't it? Some half century ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously opined, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." In essence, Dr. King dreamed that one day people would be colorblind when it comes to race. But that was then, and this is now. Today, Dr. King would actually be condemned as a racist by those on the left and those populating school boards and higher education. And no, folks, I'm not kidding about that. In any event, it would indeed appear that the rules have changed vis-a-vis this whole identifying shtick. A man can identify as a woman and vice versa. A human being can identify as a feline. A 40-something dude can identify as a 6-year-old girl. And now clearly, according to the Waterloo Region District School Board and the University of Waterloo, if you're a honky like me, but you say that you identify as a black person, hey, no problem. That final taboo in the identifying shtick, i.e. pretending to be a member of another race, well, it's been eradicated. You know, I think Cole Porter was way, way ahead of the curve when he penned this lyric.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was a look on to something shocking, but now God knows anything goes.
Yeah, anything goes. Bottom line, methinks it's time for the wicked woke left to offer Rachel Dolezal a sincere and heartfelt apology. Dolezal was never a racist. Her only crime was that she was simply way ahead of her time.
Ezra Levant here for Rebel News. I am in Vancouver for other business, and I had a meeting at the University of British Columbia today, and I walked by, and one of these U.S.-style, foreign-funded, professionally organized pro-Hamas protest encampments has popped up in the heart of the university. Now, final exams are over. Most of the students have vacated the university. But behind me, every ragamuffin around, including, I emphasize the professional organizers, there's a terrorist group called Samidun. It's a pro-Palestinian terrorist group similar to Hamas. It's regarded as a criminal terrorist organization in other countries such as Germany. Because Justin Trudeau is our prime minister, it's not banned here in Canada. And one of the Samidun organizers is behind this. Of course, foreign funding, of course, professional Antifa funding. I tried to talk to some of the folks here. Obviously, as soon as they see a camera, they say, "Who are you?" And they try and block it. I think he's right. It shows how thin-skinned you are. Just like my experience at Columbia and the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City, and the experience of my colleagues across the country, these folks really don't have a lot of arguments. They're more cult members who delegate the communicating to the senior organizers, and many of them are professional haters from Antifa or whatnot. As I was walking by, two people just on the street recognized me, partly because I'm wearing a Rebel News shirt, and they came up and talked to me. Here, I'll show you how those conversations went. I'm here at UBC with Joe.
Hello.
So tell me about yourself and what it's like being on campus with the Palestinian protests these days.
Well, I mean, I'm a fourth year major in poli-sci. I'm graduating this year, and since October 7th and the horrible massacre of all the Jewish people there, I was actually in the kibbutz that got massacred in August in Israel, Gaza, and it's just been an environment of intimidation and harassment towards anything that's not matching their views, essentially. Like, it's just been horrible. They've been harassing Jewish students, chanting Intifada, revolution, calling for basically terrorist acts, and it's just like a horrible environment for campus. And now they've set up this encampment, which just will serve to further intimidate Jewish students and those who feel like they need to speak out.
Yeah. Are you a student here?
I'm not a student. I'm a parent of a student, and I live on campus.
Oh, yeah. And how do you feel about this encampment here?
Well, same as I feel about the rest of the encampments. It's horrifying, it's anarchy, it's hateful. It's not doing good to anyone. So yeah, I'm appalled that the university is not doing anything like many other universities, and I hope they would speak up.
Are you Jewish yourself?
No, I'm not.
How do the non-Jewish students feel about this? Like, there's a lot of international students. Are most students here just sort of nose to the grindstone, do their studying, or is this a political kind of campus?
I would say that UBC is kind of a more sciencey campus, so it's a little less involved. Most students are nose to the grindstone. We have quite a large like international population that's not as interested in this, but so it's a small population on both sides that is doing all the advocacy and political work.
I think it's not only anti-Jewish, it's also anti-democracy and anti-free speech, because, for example, they don't want to have a discussion with us. So whether we are Jewish or not, they are just not open to have a conversation. It's more like a dictatorship, to be honest, like an oppressive kind of thing, pretending to end up using the wokeness.
Yeah, I just took some pictures and they started to try and block me. I mean, within seconds. I don't think they know a lot. Well, how do you think it's going to end? I mean, I guess final exams, I mean, I don't know how many students are on campus right now, but do you think this will be a permanent encampment?
I think if the university doesn't take a stand and doesn't kick them out, they will stay as long as they can, just like they do the other campuses. The exams, if I know correctly, ended last week, so there aren't many students here. And they waited for the nice weather to come campus. Yeah. It's much nicer.
Well, that's it. I didn't mean to do any journalism today. I was at UBC for other reasons. And I came across another pro-Hamas encampment in the heart of one of the wokest universities in Canada. It's sort of gross. To see more about this or to do something about it, go to our special website, deporthamas.com.